Sandra, maybe I could then tell you the story of freedom of choice, which is a story I already started to look for when I was a child and discovered that the news media were all about wars, and I thought, well, evidently somebody can change that. And later on, when I was in engineering school, I was seeing that they were describing things as they are. So my question was how does that start to be? Where does it come from? So if you looked at it in a different way, how do you discover newness? And so the answer which I got at that time is that you discover newness by changing the boundary conditions. So you look at what you know, and then you look at a bit differently, and you hope to find something new. For me, that wasn't good enough. I call that the Olympic inching effect, because in the Olympic Games, you find that people try to be the best or the quickest at whatever they are doing. And so often, one guy just runs 1 inch faster than the other guy. But they don't stop to see how does walking actually take place. And once you understand how walking takes place in the connection between body, mind, soul and spirit, then you will know how the body can walk best, and everybody will walk at top speed, and that's it. So I was looking for a way to understand that form of newness. And after my engineering school and after my medical school, I brought it together in what is the essence of freedom of choice. Freedom of choice is the foundation of life. And let me try to explain that in the way I ran into it, because that is probably the road that most people will need to travel in trying to understand how reality and science and religion is very much different from what people think it is. Everybody is sort of thinking in the same way, like these sports people in the Olympics, all doing things in the same way until somebody finds a different way of doing it and getting way ahead. In the same way in science, everybody is thinking in the same way until somebody starts to think differently and gets way ahead. Nikola Tesla is an example of that. So in everything, there is a different way of looking at it. And so I started to realize that reality, as I learned to look at it in engineering school, was different from realization as I started to look at it in medical school. The foundation of the story of freedom of choice is that in engineering, we look at things which are fixed, which are solid, which are definable, predictable, repeatable, and so on. But that's actually not how it works. If you look at the development of science, the scientists look at matter. I bring that up again and again. In doing so, they found molecules which are not fixed, but which are variable. Then they discovered that molecules are composed of atoms which transform all the time, and then they realized that what transforms the atoms is actually the quanta. So there was a fundamental shift in what happens in science, and I looked at that from a different perspective and realized that that's what happens in our body as well. In our body, I realized that we are not the cadaver that medical science tries to make us out to be. Doctors learn about classical science, and they are taught the models of the predictability of science, that things need to be verifiable, repeatable, predictable. But the only instance in which that works is when you're dealing with dead matter, which means that nothing will change. That, as the Newton principle says, is action plus reaction equals zero. But if you put that in a different way, you can say action is the reaction, but in the other direction. But if it is zero, that means nothing changes. So in a way, you're stuck in a situation. In the religious terminology, that would be hell. And in the terminology of physics, that would be an inert material physical state. Hell, by the way, is the terminology of something being isolated. The traditional English word is helling off, which means to separate, put apart. Just as in the same way in French it's called enfer, from enfermer, to isolate, put apart. So in that sense, we need to look at reality, not at something that is stuck in a way that classical scientists might prefer to look at it, because it's so much more simple. But we need to understand that it's something that we actually create by our realization, because we're involved in, let's call it, participation in creation. We are creators in creation. So I was trying to find how we can discover that. And in the body, I came up with a neat and simple model which helps understand how freedom of choice operates. And that capacity to operate with freedom of choice is something you find in every living being, no matter how large and how small. Every living being is always able to do something else, and action is the opposite of the reaction. Living beings are always able to change the reaction. They can even do the opposite of what might be expected, or do something else instead. So freedom of choice basically puts us outside of this model of predictability of classical science, and puts it, let's say, right in the middle of magic, or more specifically, right in the middle of religion, when people talk about the creator of the universe. Then it is not about the creator of the universe, but the creator in the universe. Because as a creator, you're actually able to do something which was not there before. I need a little bit of an on-ramp to get from where we are now onto the highway for the thoughts that I wish to explain. And the on-ramp in this case is the property of living cells, that they are able to capture, to contain, to convert, and to project molecules. They're able to do the same for electrons. They're able to do the same for photons. And they're able to do the same for quanta. Which means that the cell is the core of the consideration of freedom of choice. If you look at a particle, it does not have a freedom of choice. If you look at a cell, it does have freedom of choice, because the cell can actually work with the quantum. It can thereby process photons. It can thereby process electrons. And it can thereby process molecules. And this is the core of the machinery by which cells are able to work with atomic nuclear forces. And what biologists look at is the result of it, that cells can take in molecules, they can change molecules, they can store molecules, they can release molecules, but those molecules that they release can be different from the ones that they took in. So cells have a pinocytosis, which is that they ingest molecules and other particles, and they have exocytosis, which is their capacity to release materials, molecules. And it means that there is a cell metabolism with, let's call it, a mouth and an anus in the cell, that would be the same portal protein which connects the outside and the inside, and is the gateway for materials coming in from the outside and going outside from the inside. So this takes place at a very fundamental level in the cells, but we also see it at the same fundamental level in the body as a whole. And in the following, in explaining the principle of freedom of choice, and by the way, this is something which I haven't found anywhere else, so this is a new thought which can help humanity to really shift gear and take the responsibility that's very much needed now. Because in freedom of choice, you can see that the political systems that exist now, they are problematic because they deny freedom of choice, as a result of which people cannot live at their full potential, but as a result of which humanity as a whole also cannot live at its full potential. So this understanding of freedom of choice has very profound and essential implications. As mentioned, it starts with the cells knowing that they can take in, can store, can transform and release. But that's also what we see in the body as a whole. In the body as a whole, we work with information. As a result of that information, we can take decisions. We can reset our self-definition. The consequence is that within our body, we will create a specific internal process which can be in a way separate, different from what happens outside of us, and that makes it possible to operate in a way independently while yet dependently, so it's called interdependent in the environment. And what I will be explaining is the same idea which has been described by the fairy tales. Children, when they go to bed and are in a highly receptive, susceptible state, are told fairy tales about kings and advisors and courts and the population. Often they involve dragons or other problematic situations. But what the children are not told is that they are the king. Because they are free to choose whatever they want to do. They are sovereigns in their own life. They are the authors of the creation of their own life. But also, when they are free to choose, there's always considerations to take into account, which in a fairy tale is depicted by the advisors. Evidently, when the king and the advisors start to assume or pretend or believe into something, then the whole court will do the same. And over the ages, you can see that the lifestyles in the courts have been changing, and that the lifestyle in one court to another court can be very, very different. So this is where basically the children learn that people can have very different beliefs. They're in complement each other. That's okay to have different beliefs, because in a different situation you would need to have a different belief to be able to deal with that properly. And in the fairy tale, that then reflects on how outside of the castle the population works with that, and the population either prospers or not. In the body you see the same. You see the king, you see the advisors, you see the court, and you see the population. But in the body you see it in the form of the pineal gland, the hypophysis, or pituitary gland. You see it then at the third level in the form of the organ glands. And at the fourth level you see it in the form of the body cells. And it is fascinating because in the relationship between these four levels of our body functioning, you see the same principles, which next time I'd like to talk about in the form of integral healthcare, which is that in our reality, we always have the relationship between space, time, energy, and consciousness. Actually, as science described it from classical theory, relativity theory, quantum theory, and field theory, we need to look at that the other way around. So field theory describes what happens before you have defined atoms. What happens at that level when there is only energy and in fact there are no real particles as yet? Superstring tries to define that. Basically, it's a field of pure information. A nice way to describe that is by calling it phase space. So in phase space there is only vibrations, and somehow in superstring theory you need to describe how these vibrations are then able to produce atoms, which can then connect up to produce molecules, which can then connect up to produce matter. In our body, we see that at the level of consciousness in our body, which is where the information of the environment and the information of the body are superimposed, and we work with that. That is what we see in the brain in a very precise manner, because in the brain we find that there is the pineal gland, which is also called the third eye because it has all of these characteristics of an eye in having, say, a visual receptivity, and it sits in the middle of the brain, which places it between the forebrain and the hind brain. So this pineal gland is actually like the joystick that people use in operating a computer game. And this pineal gland sits in the middle of a light field, which is projected by the forebrain. And the forebrain is actually the information of what happens around us. So the forebrain brings together the information of what happens on the body surface. As the movie The Matrix pointed out, we actually do not know what happens outside of us. Actually, this is a Buddhist notion called samsara, that we have sensory impressions on the surface of our body and we recode them, we give them meaning, we interpret them, we assemble them into an internalized picture of what we think might be going on around us, and that internalized picture of what happens at the surface of the body is called Maya in India. So samsara is a sensory impression of all of the vibrations on the surface of the body. And that's the light field which we can see, the radio field that we can smell. In fact, it's infrared that we can smell. We can taste the molecular frequencies and vibrations. We can hear the vibrations. We can feel the tremors, vibrations in our gut and in our body. But essentially, the only thing that we perceive is vibrations. And the whole surface of the body, in some way more specifically than other, brings all of that together. All of these vibrations are brought into the body from a sensory cell to a neuron, from a neuron to a neural plexus, from a neural plexus to the brain. So it actually has four stages going through four dimensions. So the sensory cell is a cell, is a point. The neuron is a line. The plexus is a tapestry, is a plane. And the brain is a volume, is three-dimensional. So it goes from zero-dimensional to one-dimensional, two-dimensional, through to three-dimensional. And all of this information is brought together in the forebrain as what happens on the surface of the body. So the pineal gland sort of has this light radiating on it from that side. And Carl Pribram and many others pointed out that the brain actually is like a hologram projector. So that it is actually, by definition, working with a light field in processing that information. So on the one hand, we have that information what goes around us, in fact, what goes on at the surface of the body. And in the rear brain, we get the information coming from the cerebellum, which via the brainstem is connected to the spinal cord, which via all the nerves that come out of it is connected to the inside of the body. So that means that the pineal gland is in between two, let's say, cinema projectors, one with the picture of the surface of the body and one of the picture of the core of the body. And the pineal gland processes that information and responds to that information, and that is actually the center, the pivot of freedom of choice. So we operate freedom of choice in the pineal gland. It happens in the light field, so there is no material component involved. It is a pure field of information, and that information field then defines how we interact with our environment, for the simple reason that we decide that we want to be more veering towards the what happens on the surface of the body, what we might consider the outside. So we, in a way, go outside of ourselves, or in the other way, that we return more into ourselves or back to ourselves in what happens in the core of the body. So the pineal gland is at the middle of that point of balance. It is the tipping point between outside and inside, so to say. It's a sort of a misnomer because it's right in the middle of the information field of the forebrain and the backbrain, but it's also in the middle of the information field of the whole universe. And of course, it is also its own information field. So in the pineal gland, there are four fields of information by which the part relates to the whole. And in that sense, in the way I look at it, the pineal gland is a representation or the continuation of the first cell of our body, the zygote. Because in what I do, I always try to trace everything back to the first cell of the body, because there we see that it is the seed of the whole rest of the body. In India, you would call it the bindu, the seed crystal. And so where in our body we do not see the zygote anymore, because it has unfolded to form every cell in our body, yet the functionality of the zygote we see in the pineal gland. Because that is where the information field, the whole universe, is connected to the core of you. So in that sense, it is sometimes called the seat of the soul. It is the soul is the structure of your personal integrity and your freedom of choice. All the choices that you make in your lifetime are connected in the soul. That's a bit of a story apart. So the pineal gland is that place where within you, you are in direct contact with those electromagnetic fields. And actually, the what happens in the pineal gland as the sort of representative of the zygote and thus the representative of the whole body is then correlated to what's happening in the universe as a whole. So it is your pivot of being one with the whole universe. And if you look at it at the most fundamental level, just like the zygote, the pineal gland, and every cell, is the universe turned inside out. So, in a better formulation, the cell is the universe turned outside in. On the inside of the cell, you are you. On the outside of the cell, it's the universe. So the membrane of that cell is then the connection between you and the universe. And right in the middle, the more you are identified with the pineal gland, the more you realize that you are the universe. And of course, that's what Indian and Zen and other traditions describe as the realization of Satori or bliss, Ananda, that you are actually perceiving the whole universe in what you are and as you are, how you are. There is no difference between you and the universe. You are, as they say in India, the drop in the ocean. But that is also the pivot from which you can navigate, because as a creator in creation, you are able to immerse yourself in all that is. But you can also choose to learn what it is not to be that. So God and the devil, are connectedness and separation, love and hate, are actually the same principles, but you need to realize that the one is connectedness and the other is disconnectedness, but they're connected by being able to connect and disconnect. And that is what the pineal gland is. It is in that sense like a switch in a radio diagram. It is a possibility to connect or disconnect, and that is why, in my perspective, it is the handle of freedom of choice. Actually, therein it corresponds with what Galileo Galilei said that he was seeking. He called that the fulcrum. He was trying to get leverage so that he could change the universe. But the only thing that you need to change the universe is to flip a quantum. If you are able to intentionally, purposefully, and decidedly flip a quantum, then you are able to turn everything into its opposites. And that's what Tetrionics describes in greater detail. And it is that what we do in the pineal gland. You are able to identify or disidentify, because that is the essence of freedom of choice. Are you part of the whole or are you not? As one of my friends says, that's how Shakespeare can be interpreted. To be or not to be, that is the question. Do you identify with something or do you disidentify with something? And then you can choose what you identify with the extremes of realizing that you are the universe as a whole, for the simple reason that the universe turned itself outside in informing you. But on the other side, you can also say, well, that means that I am me, whatever the universe might be. That's sort of a short-lived dream, because at some point you'll need to realize that you are actually part of the universe as a whole, because otherwise you stop existing in that sense, and that's what many religions try to point out. So, if that is a starting point, say the switch in the radio circuit, then the next point in that process is that you change from your realization at that level of information to a decision in your participation. And that was what happens in the pituitary gland. It is the hypophysis, as it's also called. There are two sides of that. It is just one step lower in the body. And where the pineal gland works with the light field, which is pure information, then the hypophysis is working with the electrical signals. It has two sides, which are called the neurohypophysis and the adenohypophysis. Hypophysis, some might say. The pituitary gland, it's also called. It is important to realize that it has two sides, and that one side of it is neuronal, which is very much the characteristic of animal behavior, and the other side is hormonal, which is very much the characteristic of plant behavior. Much more important is that the neuronal and the hormonal are both part of the regulatory system with which we can reset the boundary of the system. You see the same at the moment that the egg cell of our body becomes fertilized by a sperm. There's a four-hour procedure which precedes that, in which all of the sperms are sort of calibrated with respect of the egg. There needs to be a matching in electromagnetic field. There needs to be a vibrational matching. And out of these polarity computations, one of the cells will be found to be more suitable or more compatible than all of the millions of others. By the way, this is very wonderfully described by Jaap van der Waal, a Dutch embryologist who has the website embryo.nl. And out of that fusion of the millions of sperm with the egg, one is selected after a four-hour interval, which of course is a very long time if you consider that the sperm and the egg each have an average lifespan of 3 days. So when they merge, there is a change of interaction. It's a bit of a Laurel and Hardy story, because the DNA in the egg is hyper-extended. It is very long, very much unfolded, while the DNA in the sperm is hyper-compressed. It is very compact. And then those two need to unfold, and that unfolding process, right from the moment that the sperm merges with the egg, at that time the egg freezes over. It actually goes into a crystalline state. So from a fluid mode, it goes to a crystallized mode. That's also why other sperm cannot enter anymore. But that phenomenon taking place there is essentially electromagnetic. It is switching the surface, and that is what happens in the pituitary gland, where the neurons and the hormones actually then relay the change of involvement that you opted for in the pineal gland. And that change in involvement then reflects back on what happens at the electromagnetic level of the pituitary gland, the hypophysis, by the neurons firing and reconnecting at their level of the body, basically changing the interfaces by throwing an electromagnetic switch. And the hormones do the same by changing the electromagnetic connectivity in the body. So at the level of the neurons, you then take a decision, and that's the fundamental part of the whole story, that you have freedom of choice in the pineal gland, and then you take a decision, you repolarize the boundary of your body at every level, just as what happened with the egg cell at the moment of conception, when the sperm enters and sort of freezes over the surface of the egg cell. But now it happens at the level of the body as a whole, and the neuronal part is associated with the way the animal would do that, by changing the environment, and that's called the fight and flight aspect. The hormonal does the counterpart of that in the vegetative response, the way the plant would respond, which is the internal adaptation, or how that's called the fear and faint response. So in the hypophysis, there is this switching of the boundary, say the outside of the boundary and the inside of the boundary, corresponding with the equivalent of the forebrain and the rear brain, as mentioned before. So you reposition yourself in the environment by sending out the signals which redefine your territory in the environment, but also your conditioning within that environment. The conditioning in the environment is the animal system with the neuronal responses, fight, flight, and the reconditioning of the internal response, fear, faint, is the vegetative response. And all of that takes place by the electromagnetic signal of the neurons and the hormones. And why they are electromagnetic and how that works is very wonderfully described by Cyril Smith. And as he calls it, the neuronal system is basically the telegraph wires, and the hormonal system is basically the letter post delivery. And all of that is the system of electromagnetic communication within the body, by which we redefine our boundary. We actually define, the fines is the Latin word for the boundary or the limit. So we there determine how we limit or unlimit ourselves. So in the system of freedom of choice, which has four levels, the first level is the freedom of choice in the light field. The second is the decision in the electromagnetic field. once you have taken a decision, you have reset your boundaries. You have redefined yourself within your environment. And of course, you're free to take any decision. You can take whatever decision you want to do. You can take a wrong decision. You can take the opposite of what you know you should do. This is where we actually operate our capacity of a creator in creation. And by our decision, we navigate in our reality. We operate our capacity for realization. So by realizing what we are doing, or re-realizing what we are doing, we determine how we want to play in the universe. Do we want to be more on the side of the universe of everything is connected? Do we want to be more of this on the side of I want to find out what I am, and I want to go do it my way for a bit? And in between those two, you determine how you function internally, because the decision that you take, it redefines your boundaries. But as a result, whatever was happening in your body before then will be changing, because either you seal yourself off from the environment more, as a result of which the internal process which you are operating will need to continue as it is, because there will be nothing more coming out from the environment, or you will not be able to release things into the environment again. This is exactly the same as what happened at that level of the single cell. But on the other hand, by taking a different decision, you could also open yourself up totally, and your internal process would re-become part of the external process, which, by the way, is the definition of the principle of healing. So whatever you have thought in the freedom of choice system, and whatever you've come to conclude and decided in the decision-making system, that will lead to an internal state which we will experience as our internal climate or our internal belief. Because our body not only processes the nutrients, the food, but it also processes equally the information. So that third level of what happens in the freedom of choice cascade is that of your internal state, which I prefer to call the state of belief, or if you want to look at it in a more limited sense, the state of conviction. And that's where I often say, beware of your convictions, because you will become a convict of your convictions. By your convictions, you become a convict, you become a prisoner of your beliefs. And that is what you see worldwide in all those religions, and that what you see everywhere on the planet, with people disagreeing with each other because they have different beliefs. They are simply not aware that they chose to redefine themselves differently in what is essentially the same environment that we all form part of. And that is because we do have freedom of choice. And by the freedom of choice, we can take different decisions, and they can be different for each of us, but we will need to live them within us. So whatever you chose and whatever you decided will become your conviction, and that conviction or that belief is associated with the internal climate, which in our body is associated with the organ glands. The organ glands will tell the body if they need to be more active or more passive, if they need to grow larger or if they need to grow smaller, if they communicate more or if they communicate less. And that is essentially what is called the internal climate by Claude Bernard, a physician who realized that our body actually does produce its own internal climate. And that, by the way, is exactly what Greek medicine and Roman medicine described as the four humors, the four humors are the internal climate settings which are the counterpart of what we see in the climate around us. So in the climate around us, we can see that there is summer and winter, there is spring and fall. So in winter, everything is sort of self-contained, reduced to its minimum. In summer, everything is exuberant, sort of bursting out, turning itself inside out. Spring is where the internalized process opens out to the externalized process. Fall is where the state of being open is reduced and limited to the state of being closed. But that's precisely what we see in these four humors, in this internal climate, as it is specified by these organs in our body, specifically the organ glands, because it is the organ glands that responds to the neurons and the hormones, and the organ glands then are basically the riders of the organ. That system of the organ glands is very well known, and it has been realized to be so important that in Greek and Roman mythology, these were called the gods, because they are the ones that can reset our internal state. If you go back to the Sanskrit understanding, then God is a generator, operator, and destroyer. But the only thing that you would generate, operate, and destroy at that level is, as mentioned earlier, your own redefinition of your own self-definition. It is where, by your decisions, you redefine your boundary. So you actually reconfigure yourself, quite literally. And so this was already known. So in Indian literature, you can find that the organs are there called the deities, and they correspond with our different attitudes on internalizing, externalizing, active, passive, selfish, unselfish, and so on. And they are related to the different gods of the Olympus. That's just a different formulation of exactly the same. And in Indian and Chinese medicine, they're associated with a sound. Those are always sounds of going out or going in, and being humming or being outward shouting. So they are exactly the same. How do you redefine yourself in being open and closed in the environment? So at that level, you find that this whole system of convictions and belief, which is associated with the internal climate in the body, is actually defined by the glands of the organs in the body. The organs are the equivalent of the deities of India or the gods of the pantheon of antiquity. But there you can also see that is actually the same as the zodiac. So the internal organ cycle, which is the flow of blood between all of the organs, blood being Mercury, and then the organs being all of the planets, they together form one cycle. It is actually the counterpart of the seasonal cycle that we live in on Earth. So in that sense, the flow of blood and the regulatory function of the organs is actually the instrumentation by which we can be our own air conditioners, or climate conditioners. So by understanding how these organ glands work, and by realizing that we can address them and reset them, as was the custom in the mystery plays of antique Greece, you can redefine how you relate to your environment at the chemical level. Because that is the whole interesting part of the story, that in our body we see that the light field in which the pineal gland is bathed then connects to the electromagnetic field, which operates in the pituitary gland via the neurons and the hormones. And then this electrical signal is converted into a chemical response, which takes place at the level of the organs in the body, as mediated by the organ glands. And then we come to the fourth level, which is that of the body cells. And the body cells, every cell in the body, is living in that climate which has already been reset by the gods of the Olympus, or the glands of the organs. But as a result, the internal climate heated up as if it would be summer, or cooled down as if it would be winter, or started to accelerate as we might see in spring, or started to sort of let go of things as we might see in the fall. And all of the body cells respond to that at many different levels. So the cells then, in a way, thrive differently by that change of the climate, the chemical climate of the milieu interne, of the level of beliefs and convictions, the metabolic cycles in the body. But that determines how the body cells then will grow larger, grow faster, grow less, grow smaller. And so at that level, we can see that the fourth level is actually that of the realization or materialization. Actually, it is the level of reflex. So the system of freedom of choice is very fundamental. It is the essence of our being, and it makes use of a gear with four positions. In the pineal gland, you work with the light field, which is the universal information field, which you compare to your own information, as the pineal gland is one cell cluster in the body as a whole. And it takes into account how the surface of the body and the core of the body are different. So that information in the light field is then relayed to a decision at the electromagnetic level of the pituitary gland. That then is relayed to a change in the chemistry of all of the organ glands, which is the gods of the Olympus, which is the zodiac, which is also the chakras of the body. All of that has been measured, which frequencies are involved and all that. So you can actually see that at the level of the beliefs, you retune your body, and you can in a way compute if the decision that you took is compatible with your own being and that of the universe. And then by reflex action, the cells will work that out. Literally, they will act on that change of state which you have created. So this is something which I realized about 2 years ago. So this is a fundamental different perspective which is tied up with the foundation of the science of life, that we can describe freedom of choice, we can understand how freedom of choice works, we can understand how we work with freedom of choice, but most specifically, we can also never define it. Because freedom of choice is always individual, it always operates in the phase field outside of physical reality. The pineal gland is just our little sensor in that phase space of pure information, and in being sensitive to it, in a way you then determine if you connect to it or not. So that is the level of freedom of choice. Then once you take a decision, you actually determine your will. And so the second level is that of the free will. Once you have taken a decision and you created your own conviction, then you will start to act on that. Your body will start to radiate that out. And that's the level of free expression. Your body already is the carrier of the decision that you took. So by whatever you do in your body, you're already expressing that. And the fourth level is that of free association or free dissociation. Because at the moment your body starts to act on it, you will change your relationship with and in your environment, within your environment. So to follow these four steps again, so the freedom of choice in the pineal gland then leads to that the freedom of choice in the pineal gland is in the light field, outside of the physicality of matter. Then at the second level it goes electric in a pituitary gland with the decision that you take. At the third level it is chemical in the organ glands with the conviction that you have. And the fourth level it is then the physicalization of basically acting out on what you changed in your involvement in the environment as creator in creation. It is essential to understand that this principle of freedom of choice connects up to the foundation of the universe. In conventional science, you would describe that as a relationship between the photon leap between the atoms at the level of the pineal gland. The photon leap between the atoms is then associated with the electron leap within the atom. That corresponds with the electromagnetic change in the pituitary gland. The electron leap within the atom can then lead to electron oscillation between atoms. It's also called the valency of the electron. It sort of hovers between one and the other. It sort of moves up and down, which is what we see in the internal cycle, the internal circulation of the organ glands at the chemical level, which is, by the way, also the flow of free electrons. And I'll come back to that in a bit. And then the fourth level is the consequence of this electron oscillation between two atoms, resulting in electron bonding, that the electron actually gets a fixed place between those two electrons and it connects them up and makes them material. So the photon leap, the electron leap, the electron oscillation and electron bonding are actually the difference between information, atomic physics, molecular physics and material physics. But all of that is simply an electromagnetic field, because you can see that the information at the first level leads to an electromagnetic change at the second level, which leads to an electric flow to at the third level, which leads to an electron bonding at the fourth level. So with everything that we know about physical reality, in a way we have been given a wrong picture, because people are told that things are material. And as I described in the segment on alchemy, we know that material is just whenever the electrons are bonded. And when we go from the material or the earth element of alchemy back to the water element or the process level in the time domain, then we can see that we are dealing with electron flows instead of bonded electrons. And then we go one level back, we can see that we are actually dealing not with electron flow, but the interaction between the electric field and the magnetic field. Go back one more level, and we see that it's all an aspect and manifestation of the phase field. And as I said in the story about the alchemy, in that way we can see that information, transformation, variation, and structure are the four levels of change of the electromagnetic field. In our body, we would call that consciousness, the regulatory system, the physiology, and the anatomy. But that's just a different way of describing the same. By understanding that it's all actually an electromagnetic process, and specifically a change from information to materialization, then this whole process of freedom of choice becomes very logical, very explicit, because that is the transition from freedom of choice in the level of light to the decision that we take, the free will, at the level of electromagnetism, which then goes into the free expression at the level of the electric circulation with the body, compared to the software in the computer, which then leads to the, let's call it the hardware of the computer, the anatomy of the structure of the body, which we then see from the outside as the freedom of expression turned into the freedom of association, dissociation. Do you get involved or do you get yourself uninvolved? So that is the essence of freedom of choice. And I was really happy when I discovered it, because for me it bridged the whole gap between what I learned in engineering school and what I was looking for in medical school. The problem that I found that in medical school they just looked at the body as a cadaver, with the same laws of physics as I had learned in engineering school. Instead, I have now been able to turn that around and show that our body is material because the cells together take decisions, they together process their internal connectedness and create a climate of beliefs. And as a result, they create the structure of the body that we work with. So that in the transition from freedom of choice to free will to free expression to free association, we can describe what's happening within us, but the most important conclusion was that freedom of choice is always, by definition, purely individual. No one else has any say in that, and no one should actually interfere with that. And on that basis, you can say that the interference with freedom of choice is a crime against life, because freedom of choice is the essence of life. It is the quintessence of the alchemist. As I said in the story on alchemy, the quintessence of the alchemist is that dynamic of the quantum, the quantum flip. And in freedom of choice, our cells use the quantum flip to change the state of the body between the light field, the electromagnetic field, the electrical circulation, and electron bonding. So, with the understanding that freedom of choice is the given of life, with the realization that freedom of choice is precisely what makes you a creator in creation, this is where you can redefine all religions to now account for how freedom of choice works, and acknowledge that freedom of choice is the essence of our being alive and our being a living being, then with that you can come to the realization that you must respect the freedom of choice of other beings. And that leads to four fundamental laws of freedom of choice, which I call the principle of freedom of choice, the principle of respect, the principle of responsibility, and the principle of reliability. You as an individual, like every living being, have freedom of choice, which means that you can determine your internal state. You can determine if you want to be more or less involved with the universe as a whole in the environment that you live in. If you want to embed yourself with the environment, you'll find yourself a part of that environment. If you want to do something else, you disentangle yourself from that environment a bit more, and then you move to a different environment to have a different experience of life. That's all based on your freedom of choice. Everybody else also has freedom of choice. Every living being, every microbe, every virus, every fungus, every somatite has freedom of choice, because they can change their identity and integrity by operating the quantum flip. So you need to respect that. So freedom of choice is not just that you have freedom of choice and you are in that sense a creator in creation. You operate the God principle of redefining your involvement by changing your system boundary. You generate, operate, or destroy the boundary situation as you have that. And that is the God principle: generate, operate, destroy. You need to work with that in integrity. That's why I call it the I-God principle: integrate, generate, operate, destroy. And by doing that, you're able to redefine yourself, but every other living being can do that too, so you need to respect that. evidently, if you have freedom of choice within any environment that you're in, then you will be making changes in your relationship to your environment. By changing your belief, you change your metabolic system, you change what you take in and what you put out, you change your interactional dynamic within the environment. That will have a sequence of consequences. So by operating freedom of choice as a creator in creation, you create a sequence of consequences. But if you want to be able to survive yourself, you must be able to deal with that. You need to learn to surf the changes that you create. And actually, that's also the story of the chakras. You use these organ glands to reset your internal climate. You also reset your belief, and that means you reset your communication with people in your environment. But when you do that, you have been creating waves, and you must be able to resolve that. It is very nice that the equation of Mach, well known from the Mach sonic boom, when an airplane goes faster than the speed of light, the wave that the airplane makes, just like a ship makes waves, will pile up on the front of the airplane, just like it will happen in front of a ship or around us. We create waves because everything in the universe is vibrations. So when we change our internal state, we change the state of vibration. So we do create waves. But if we go more in one direction, we go in the direction of wave accumulation. When, like the boat or the airplane, we go faster, you will at some point go as fast as the wave that you create in the environment that you are in. And waves always propagate with the speed of sound, in fact, the speed of material conduction of that environment. So if you go faster than that, you will break through your boundary of consciousness. You will break to your barrier of understanding. You will crash into an unknown situation, which can be very instructive, but we can also be very catastrophical. So the principle of Mach describes that, and in our lives we do that. So when you work with the response ability, one of the things you need to learn is how you create waves and how you navigate the waves that you yourself create, so that you're able to respond to the changes that you are creating. That's also called the law of karma and dharma. Dharma is your ability to create as a creator in creation using freedom of choice. The law of karma means action. Karma is action, but it's also the consequences of all your actions. So whatever you have changed in the environment will in a way bounce back at you. And in physics that's called the law of Lenz, or the law of induced resistance. This principle is known in very many ways. So whatever you do, you will get a feedback from what you have been doing. So you need to be able to work with that. So that's the principle of responsibility. And as we can see at the moment, classical science has become very irresponsible. They said that they were outsiders, observers. They were playing God, but they were not assuming the responsibility. And so as a result of these objective or material scientists, models have been created where are actually destructive to our environment. They're also destructive to other life forms. They are equally destructive for humanity. It's just that people do not see that the waves they have been bouncing out are already bouncing back to us. So if we don't interact with those feedback waves, the information that we get back, then people will not learn that they are not scientists looking at things like children filling their diapers with whatever they want to get rid of, the consumer society, but they need to realize that they are actually planters of paradise. That they need to do the job on the dung heap. I like that metaphor of the Bible, that whatever people do will produce debris. So at the moment humanity is living on a dung heap, and our job on the dung heap is to clean up the mess. That is to be responsible, to convert whatever we get as feedback of our actions which did not work well, to turn it into something that does work well. So from that level on, we can then go to the next principle of freedom of choice, which is that of reliability. And reliability is basically that when you interact with the sequence of consequences of your actions, you can actually learn to steer those, to navigate those, so that you can actually build up on what you're doing. Just imagine that you're standing somewhere, and by your freedom of choice, you decide that you can do a step forward. And then you realize that, again, you have freedom of choice. So what's the next step going to be? You could take another step. Are you doing it? Because you have freedom of choice. You can also choose not to. Are you going to take that step, or are you going to take a step back? And there are a lot of people who have a standpoint, the fixed standpoint of their belief, and then they go a step forward, and the next step is a step back. Or maybe they go a step to the right. Oh, they discovered something new. Step to the right. But then they go back again. Step to the left. Oh, discovered something new. Step back again. Step behind. Oh, discovered something new. Step back again. So they never come out of their little action radius of one step away from where they were. They never take the next step in the next direction. And evidently, if you look at it from that sense, that you can sort of go forward, backward, left, right, up and down, then the step after that can do the same. And reliability is the ability to build up on the steps that you have already taken. And evidently, because we are in interaction, we are social creatures. Actually, humans are cells in the body of humanity. So we are not just taking decisions in ourselves, for ourselves, by ourselves, but we also take decisions on behalf of humanity, of which we form part. That's a higher level of consciousness. It used to be called God consciousness, but actually the consciousness of humanity, one level up of all life forms, one level up of all things conscious. So you need to learn to realize that whatever step you take, it's not just relevant for you, but it is also relevant for other people. And so the reliability is that we need to somehow be able to build up on the decisions that we have already taken, so that from there we can then take a next decision and a next decision and a next decision and actually get somewhere. That we actually get out of the egg of our ignorance and step out into the universe as creators in creation. And on the basis of these principles of freedom of choice, I now am describing the principles of involvement, which is first relational involvement. How do you relate to your environment? And the next step after that is how you relate with others in that environment. And then the fourth step will be how do you operate as a creator in creation? Because freedom of choice is something that takes place only within your own body. So it is an internal process. Once you start to express it, you will change your interaction with your environment. So your relationship will change, but you need to understand how that works, because being a creator in creation, or being a god in action, requires the same kind of learning by falling and getting up again as we have in the development from baby to child to adolescent to adult. So we need to realize that the freedom of choice that we have in ourselves, it will interact our interface with our environment. As a result, it will affect our environment, and thus it will reposition us within that environment. There's four stages to that. So that second aspect of freedom of choice, how do you do it, always pertains to how do you do it with relationship to the earth, but it also goes with relationship to humanity. So at the third level of description, you can then see that when you interact with earth, when you actually need to account for what is the earth doing back to you while you're acting, which is the ecological hygiene and the learning to be responsible as a creator in creation. This is why I call it planting paradise. You actually need to enhance the environment that you live in, otherwise you won't survive. But in the same way that you need to know how your creative powers affect the earth, you will also need to gauge how your creative potential affects humanity. And in first instance, that would be other people in humanity. So the third level of description is what happens in the interaction between two people who operate freedom of choice. Actually, that's where you then get all of the description of the various type of magic, the various type of criminality, of which, as I mentioned, the crime against life is one, the denial of freedom of choice, and the crime of disrespect, the pollution of the planet is one as well. And finally, at the fourth level of the learning how to operate freedom of choice will be the realization that you are a human in humanity, and that once humans in groups start to respect and operate the principle of freedom of choice, then as a result they will also be able to build up on that. This principle of reliability will build up. Political system, a religious system, educational system and media systems will need to be turned around, because the individuals will need to decide how they want to live, and they will need to find out how they want to form larger groups, because as a human they will initiate relationships. By their relationships of relationship they will form groups, and the groups of groups together form humanity. But all of that is based on freedom of choice, because freedom of choice is the essence of life. And freedom of choice is the essence of what you do in your life. So when you are born, your first cell already is making a series of cell division decisions which operate by freedom of choice, taking into account earlier information as it has been stored in the DNA. But that's just a backbone, like a backup program of the decisions you can take. The cell can always overrule that. And then you can see that in the same way that the DNA has been created by all our ancestors, and the same way that you can create your DNA by adding new information to it or eliminating wrong information from it, Bruce Lipton has described that, then you can see that you are actually the architect of your own DNA. You can redesign your DNA, or you can build up on that, the principle of reliability yet again. But in the same way that your cell is using the DNA to build up the body, making use of previous information of all the ancestors, likewise, in your life, you're able to take decisions one after the other, after the other, after the other, and they build up, let's call it the spiritual DNA. They connect decisions that make sense to you and which become crucial in your life. So all of those decisions which are crucial in your life, the trail of all of those decisions by which you've come from being a zygote to where you are now, they string up and form a fractal, let's call it the DNA. And in my perspective, that is what I call the soul. So for me, the soul is the backbone of all of the decisions that you've ever taken. And by the principle of responsibility and the principle of reliability, plus also the principle of respect for yourself, you will in some way maintain and tune that fractal of all your decisions that you've taken. In a way, you can consider it to be your magic wand in what you can achieve in your lifetime. And the more you have been able to build up that sequence of choices of the soul in your body, the more you have extended your soul, the more you have taken decisions in very different environments, the more the integrity of your decision is tantamount, fundamental and decisive for everything you do, the more your fractal of decisions will become coherent, and it will operate as a magic wand, because it will become, say, your spiritual spinal cord, your antenna, by which you can reach out in creation more and more, and the effect that you have will extend further and farther, because that is the essence of what you do from the soul. The soul is the build-up of your internal integrity by all of the actions and interactions that you took and undertook in your lifetime. So I like to round it off, because I've now presented this whole idea of freedom of choice. I'll try to recapitulate it so that all of the ideas which I unfolded can be seen in their perspective. I started from this point of view that I understood that there was something wrong in society. Now I know that what was wrong was the lack of understanding of freedom of choice. In engineering, there are descriptions of everything in the universe except that part where freedom of choice is involved. It denies freedom of choice. In a way, the church had said that scientists could discover everything material, but should not look into the soul and spirit. And now I can identify the soul and spirit as the capacity for freedom of choice and the integrity of using freedom of choice. I've described how I was able to find that in the body, with the relationship from the pineal gland, pituitary gland, the organ glands, and the body cells, of which the fairy tales are in their way a description. And I pointed out that what happens in the use of freedom of choice makes use of fundamental principles of cosmic creation, as we see in the photon leap, the electron oscillation, electron bonding, as we experience in our body as a relation between consciousness, the regulatory system, the physiology, and the anatomy. But that means that every living being is the container, the traditional term would be the grail of freedom of choice, which would be called the quintessence. And so in our body we can see that freedom of choice is the quintessence for creation, and that our life is essentially about learning how to create by the use of freedom of choice. And as I mentioned, I came to boil it down to four principles that need to be acknowledged. The first is that, yes, there is freedom of choice. The second is, yes, you must respect freedom of choice as others as much as you would like to do it for yourself. The third is, every action has a sequence of consequences, and in using freedom of choice you must acknowledge that and you must account for that. And the fourth is that when you use freedom of choice and you really want to learn how to operate freedom of choice, you must be able to learn from your mistakes and correct your errors, and to open new possibilities so that you are able to step into the unknown as a creator in creation by the principle of freedom of choice. So let me close off this this recording for here and come back to you so that we can evaluate.
Okay.